Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest-running podcast, now in our 15th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we sit down with James Maida, the president and CEO of Gaming Laboratories International, on how GLI has responded to the coronavirus pandemic by providing expanded services for its customers. The GGB podcast is brought to you by FSB, the industry's leading sports betting solutions and technology platform. For more information, visit fsbtech.com. James Maida is a legend in the casino business. As a lawyer in the early days of the New Jersey regulatory system, he quickly saw that his agency was getting overwhelmed with requests to test slot machine systems and began to do it himself out of his spare bedroom in his apartment. Today, GLI has grown into an international conglomerate serving the needs of the gaming industry and regulators alike. The recent coronavirus pandemic has changed the world, and GLI is leading the way. Maida recognizes that remote access to games is going to be a major change, and regulators are going to want to be assured that transparency and integrity can be maintained. He spoke with GGB editor Frank Legato for the cover of the magazine's August edition at his New Jersey offices in July.
Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. We are here today with James Maida, who is CEO and co-founder of Gaming Laboratories International. Thanks for being with us today, James.
Thanks to be here. It's great to see you.
Okay, well, here we are just beginning to come out of this whole thing. How are you able to help your clients through this whole COVID-19 lockdown?
You know, we saw things coming in March, and we really quickly figured out how to put technology in place to basically not be able to skip a beat throughout this whole thing. We contacted regulators early on who allowed us to take gaming equipment, for instance, in Nevada and other places, home to our houses, which may not be allowed under normal circumstances. All of our regulator clients waived rules requiring us to test things in the office, so that we were able to really do a lot of remote testing. Over the last 4 or 5 years, we've developed a robust system where we can remote control all of our slot machine games from outside the office. Mm-hmm. So our employees were able to, where they could work from home and actually test games that were here in the office. And then really over literally a 3-day period, our IT teams, our HR teams, our legal teams, our accounting teams quickly transitioned to remote. We have 1,400 employees now on remote connections. Our servers are just as fast as if they're in the office. Mm-hmm. And our IT teams really allowed us to continue to do what we do. Having said that, we do have about 20 to 30 people in each of our offices around the world that come in every day. They prefer to work in the office, and we use all the CDC guidelines and all the local guidelines around the world. So we are doing work here and remotely. And the good news is that we haven't skipped a beat. Everything has been done that the clients need done. So it's almost as if it's just been normal.
So you've continued to operate at full capacity with all your employees and everything? Okay.
Yeah.
Wonderful. How about the volume of new products for testing? Has that dropped down?
You know, obviously, that's a great question. Obviously, when the COVID hit, many of the suppliers furloughed many of their employees and many of their R&D teams or their compliance teams, and we've been working through that as well. So the volume was up all the way to the end of April because we were really running off work that we had in the lab. Mm-hmm. May and June have been a little on the quiet side, but we've actually seen a lot of resurgence in the suppliers over the last 2 to 3 weeks now as people are getting back to work. So it's really not about our volumes. We're just here to help the suppliers get through this. And whether they're submitting a lot or a little, we're going to have people on the ground ready to take their work and get it done. So it's really not about how much people are submitting. It's just, are we able to get the work done for them?
Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of new technology come up during this crisis. What have you seen? How have you adapted to any new technology?
You know, there's been a lot of system improvements where people are thinking about when people end a session on a game, how the system will be able to alert cleaning people to come and clean the game. I think that's pretty cool. So there's a lot of systems and intelligence that way to knowing what's going on the floor. Mm-hmm. The other thing that we've seen a lot of is through payment processing and new ways of putting money on the games. And so we're seeing a lot of submissions around contactless, touchless ways of moving money onto the game and moving money off the game. I was just telling somebody the other day, I think I've had the same $20 or $40 in my wallet for the last 2 months because I haven't, you know, I go everywhere and I charge $5.50 on a credit card, which I never used to do. So I think we're seeing a lot of those changes, and those are getting priority through the lab. Almost all the suppliers are showing us those things, and we're working really closely with regulators to move those out on the floor as they can.
That's systems predominantly. How about online gaming testing? That volume had to go up during this crisis.
So our online volume, you know, we do, you know, throughout Europe and Asia, lots of online gaming. We had a lot here in the United States where we do, you know, almost, you know, most of the work. I would say that it's going up, the amount of online, but it's not going up at the, you know, exponentially. It's we're getting a lot of work, but we've always gotten a lot of work. I think that as time goes on, you're going to see regulators and state governments and policymakers start switching to more of a digital, where maybe they were a little afraid, or policy-wise, it didn't quite fit. That now can show us that even during a pandemic, that can at least keep casinos alive and these companies making money. So, yeah, the work's been up. It's carried us through. We've been really pleased with it. Our European offices are full of online digital kind of that kind of work, and we continue working with it.
Now, another thing that's come to the forefront during this situation has been the so-called skill games that have been unregulated till now. Wyoming authorized them with testing. Have you seen any of these products to test?
Yeah, so Wyoming and Virginia we work really closely with. You know, these skill games are, again, a new type of gaming that states are looking forward to allow them to again, make money, make revenue for the state. And we've been working with both Virginia and Wyoming for an extended period of time. Kevin Mullally and Michael Capen run our government teams, and they work really closely with these clients. And I expect to see more of this. You also saw this in Georgia, where they have an amusement skill kind of a game as well. They've had that for several years. So, you know, new types of gaming coming, new kinds of ideas are coming, and we're always here to help people.
Now, do you use the same criteria for certifying a skill game as you do for a slot game? In other words, with respect to the theoretical percentages and so forth?
Yeah, so really, first of all, the states will give us the rules and regulations that they want us to use, okay? So each state, it'll be different. With respect to how you figure out a payout percentage, we can calculate the best player, you know, never making a mistake versus, you know, that can come out as a percentage. We can come up with it. We can come up with an average player and what that percentage will look like, and we could come up also with a really unskilled player and what that percentage would be. And then it's up to the state to tell us what percentage to use and how to think about, should it be an average skilled player, should it be a poorly skilled player, should we be looking for a percentage that's for the highest skilled player. So those are the kinds of things that we work with and with the rule writing process or with their statutes and things like that.
But they're still strict on integrity issues and things like that.
Yeah, okay. So those states are running, you know, it's just a different type of game, but it's under a gaming commissioner, it's under legal authority. It's not games that are just being put in randomly into a state without any government approval, because that would be illegal gambling, which is not things that we would test here.
Some of these games, AGM, you know, and AGA, obviously, you know, still think they're illegal, but do you think that's going to change? Places like Pennsylvania, that doesn't have any regulations are
Well, we most recently wrote a paper, a white paper for AGM and AGA. Kevin Mullally did, our general counsel, around unregulated illegal gambling, right? And I think AGA and AGM are taking a very good and tough approach that gambling machines should not be used in a state jurisdiction if they're not legal. And you know, I think that paper sets out all the reasons why that should be. You know, you mentioned Pennsylvania, and you know, if those games I think that you referred to are in bars and restaurants and not regulated by the Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board, we would see that as illegal gambling device and illegal gaming venue, and that is not something we would test for. So if, what might be legal in Wyoming and Virginia, because state law says it's legal and there's a gaming commission or someone running it, when it winds up in a state where there is no regulatory structure, there is no regulator, it's not legal under statutes and regulations, we would have no involvement in that. And we see that as a very clear line. We work for regulators. We don't work for, you know, testing games to go into illegal markets.
Okay. But the industry is beginning to wake up now. How are you helping clients recover as the casinos begin to open?
You know, we're really, that's a great question. We're really moving at their pace. You know, we first saw massive, I think 66% of the casinos are open or something at this point as we sit here today. Some have opened to large crowds, and then because of the pent-up demand, and now we're starting to see several weeks later, what is that demand? How can you make a profit on 25 or 50% of you know, where it's full, you know, because they're having restrictions? So what we're doing is really taking care of clients first, personalized customer service. We're doing field testing where we're asked to. We've done a lot of that, and we've also done some geolocation testing for clients, and so that really has not stopped. And we're continuing to work at not only the regulator's pace but the operator's pace. When they need to reopen and they need our services, we're going to be there. We have not missed any of those opportunities that where somebody called up and said, can a GLI person come here or there? We've already had, always had somebody right on site, and that has not stopped.
FSB is more than just a platform. With more than 100,000 live sporting events traded by FSB teams each year, FSB has the experience to help you launch the most exciting U.S. sports betting operation. Built by experts with years of experience and powering some of the world's most successful brands, the FSB platform has been created to put you in charge of your business. FSB helps by creating online and retail solutions that are supported by an incredibly strong mobile offering with marketing, trading, payments, and all the other tools required to support a world-leading sports book. The FSB team is good, but their technology is great. And now back to our podcast.
Regulation is a big part of all of this. Have you altered your program of regulatory roundtables as the industry begins to reopen? Are you replacing any of the physical events with virtual events,
for example? Yeah, so we've been doing a lot of virtual events. I think I'm doing one next week. With respect to, we've been doing a lot of webinars. We have a webinar series we've put out. But with respect to our roundtables, our major roundtable won't be until next March. So we're not making any decisions on whether or not we're holding a roundtable or not until we can really understand. Because as you can see right now, Frank, we have this situation where, you know, you think you're good in the state and then it starts opening up and then the virus gets gets very bad. I think today as we're talking, Texas, Florida, lots of states like that are struggling. So I think we're just taking a just-in-time attitude where we're going to make decisions when we need to make decisions, but we don't want to sit here today and tell anybody that we're doing this or that 3 to 6 or 9 months out. But we've been participating widely in virtual events by GSA, now called IGSA, SAGC. I think we're Kevin Mullally's doing an event next week. I'm doing one. Christie's Global Gaming Women And Karen Sierra has just been doing a ton of roundtables and a ton of webinars. So we're out there where we can, but our own series, we're waiting to see what happens.
Okay. What about the content? You've altered the content with respect to the industry response to the crisis?
Yeah, I think some of the content, a lot of the questions you're asking me today is really what's covered in the content, but everybody's asking us, what's new in systems? What's mm-hmm. new in player protection? What's new in iGaming? One of the things that we're seeing interesting is a shift away from table games and onto multi-station electronic table games, mm-hmm. right? So that where there's no dealer, but it's all done electronically. So we're getting a lot of those. A lot of that content has been coming out in these seminars. It's interesting though, as you get on them, whether it's in Latin America or it's in North America or it's in Europe, everybody's at a different place in this coronavirus. So you have to know, all right, well that government's coming out of it. Versus, oh, that government's just going into it. And so it's interesting because we're a global company and all of our offices around the world have different, we're in a different phase of the coronavirus.
Mm-hmm. Do you do much social gaming testing?
We've done some. Uh-huh. It's not strictly regulated. It requires testing. But many of the suppliers that make the games are asking us to do some of that testing, and we do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that gets them ready in case they go to real money.
Right. The social gaming is also a great training ground to see mm-hmm. if there's a love for the game, and if there is, then it'll convert it over to real money, as you said.
Okay. More general questions. How has the function of gaming testing in general changed since you launched this business as an alternative to state-sponsored labs those many years ago?
The volume is absolutely picked up, right? Mm-hmm. Today we have over 1,000 people that are in our gaming division alone that test and certify games. I think the work has become harder. The technology is more difficult, mm-hmm. and the games are much more complex. So that just all of that together makes our job much more difficult. I think the quality of how we approach it today continues to increase. Mm-hmm. Last year we had a revocation rate of less than a half of 1%, right? So 995 times out of 1,000, there's no bug in the software that goes out into the field. I don't think anybody can put those numbers up today, and I don't think we were doing that 10 years ago. So that's really, really changed. I think the mediums have also changed. Before it was plug a slot machine in, it had three reels, it was pretty simple, and now we have all of these different types of games, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. skill games and iGaming and traditional slots and sports book and sports betting and iGaming. So there's so many different things.
And we're in an era of just rapidly changing technology, and I've often wondered this. Do you have a portion of your staff dedicated to just keeping an eye on it, keeping a handle on all the changing technology, and so you can work with your clients to remain current on it?
Yeah, so we have a compliance division, our technical compliance division, that also doubles as our group. They're over 60 in number, and they travel the world or they meet with clients, and they're the first line to say, hey, this is new that's coming in. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, we monitor all the new technology, whether it's at a show, whether it's clients giving us a roadmap. Interesting, all of our clients globally give us a 1 year to 2 year roadmap of all their new products coming. So mm-hmm. we'll actually know things a year ahead of when you might see them at a show. And they sit and they work with our compliance team so that we can then go brief regulators and say, this is something that's new that's coming. So that's a very large portion of our work.
Okay. Do you deal with operators? What's your role in serving operators since they're not your first clients? How do you communicate your services to them?
Well, I think we're in daily, weekly contact with operators. Understanding that operators all have their own iGaming sites or sports betting, and so we are engaging directly with them when we're testing their systems and things like that. Mm-hmm. So all of our systems work is not only with the supplier of the system, but also with the operator, because we're on site. So I would say that we're engaging with operators more and more every year, but I would say almost as much as we engage with suppliers today. They know what we do because either the government tells them, hey, you need to have this on-site thing tested, or before this goes live, you'll need to have it certified. Mm-hmm. So we work every day with all the major operators.
The other rapidly changing area is cybersecurity. How do your services relate to that, and how has that evolved?
So our cybersecurity division is bulletproof, and we acquired them 5 years ago. They were around 20 years before we acquired mm-hmm. them. That division is rapidly growing. Even through this coronavirus situation, there's been more fraud on the internet than ever before. That part of our business is growing, 30-40% per year, and it's now global business. So our bulletproof offices in Europe, our bulletproof offices in Africa, Australia, around the globe here in North America and in Canada and the United States. We do a lot of work for operators, a lot of work for lotteries mm-hmm. hire us, casino operators hire us, regulators have been hiring us, but gaming and non-gaming. More than 60% of our work is non-gaming for mm-hmm. bulletproof. So we work for dams, people who operate dams and electrical companies and large oil companies. Those people are also quite concerned about cybersecurity. So we wrap it all together. We have lots of gaming clients, but we have lots of non-gaming clients.
How about physical security, prevention of slot machine scams? That's another area that's that just continues to evolve over the past 20, 30 years. Do you have programs in place to help casinos protect?
We'll train people on what to expect. I can tell you that we're not on site providing the first level of physical security. Mm-hmm. With Bulletproof, though, going back for that for a second, we do have a SOC, a Security Operations Center, and we do monitor in real time casino operators' networks against hacking and intrusion. Mm-hmm. So there, we are providing, active security around the IT infrastructure for many casino operators and our clients, but we're not providing on-the-floor physical security. That's done by the security department of the casino, but we do train them.
Okay. Back to online testing for a second. Right. Mobile-based gaming is growing, especially with sports betting now. The iPhone is constantly evolving as well.
Right.
How do you keep a handle on all that?
Well, we have our iGaming division. We have a large group based in our Colorado office, and also a huge group, obviously, over in Europe. We test all of these products, not only on the iPhone, but on Android mm-hmm. and all of the other different platforms, whether it's a PC-based, whether it's Mac, whether it's, other different handhelds, tablets, phones, all those different things. We test all these systems through. Obviously, as new devices come out, we have to test things. As new systems come out, we have to test them against all the known devices. So, it's the permutations between the number of devices one can carry and how it can interact with a website or with a sports book or sports betting is massive. And many states have implemented online gaming, but not all have gone with mobile. Mm-hmm. And so, as I think the United States is the new area where we really believe that mobile and online will start increasing. I think it's like the last frontier. Mm-hmm. Canada has it, and obviously Europe has it, and I think America is going to have to get it, at least to get us, partway through this crisis and get some tax revenue for governments who want to take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm. Now, sports are going to start up this next month. For the past 2 years, since they repealed PAPSA, have you developed a separate sports betting division?
Yes, the sports betting division is again based in our Colorado office and also based in our UK and in the Netherlands. We do a tremendous percentage, a very high percentage of all the sports books here in the United States in terms of testing. We test them for all the states that you would expect, and we test for the largest operators. In that space, operators are and developers are starting to merge. conglomerates are being made where mm-hmm. where these companies are merging together. So those are all of our clients. And I just saw yesterday a company from Europe that we work for has announced that they're going to be coming to the United States and opening sports books by next spring. And we've been working with that client for several months now already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, over almost four decades now, you've been developing a corporate culture here at GLI. Right. What do you feel are the most important aspects of your corporate culture here?
I think our most important aspects of our corporate culture, I would say, is that we value our employees, we value our team members, and we want to make sure that there's a world-class employee experience. Not only do we go for a world-class customer experience, but we want to make sure that our employees are not only well taken care of, but that they're well trained, that we provide each employee a path to greatness. How can they become better skilled, better at what they do, even if they don't stay here with GLI, that we can get them on a path to make them be what they can be. And sometimes we lose employees that they'll leave and they'll go somewhere, which is great, because we know that we're developing tomorrow's leaders. And mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, you can do a lot over 35 years of testing, or 33 or 4 testing years of testing. But to make sure that we develop a legacy of those. And, you know, as I travel around the world, how many suppliers have GLI employees working for them now? And mm-hmm. and I think that's a good testament to hopefully what we've started with each of them. But I'm glad that every employee has that ability to reach for the stars. And we want each one to do that and excel. If they want to excel, we want to create a way that they can excel.
Okay, and finally, as we come out of this thing, what are your priorities for the near future now?
You know, I think as we come out, I think most CEOs are thinking about two things. One, we're very hopeful that we come out. We're hopeful for this fall, and we're hopeful for next year. We're hopeful for a vaccine, and we're hopeful for an antiviral drug that will help. Mm-hmm. But I think you also must plan for what would go wrong if there was a second wave and we had to shut down a second time. So I spend a lot of my time not thinking about what's coming in on a daily basis and getting that out, because we have a huge team that handle all the requests. I'm trying to think about what will the effect on our employees and our teams and our company if, God forbid, we have a second shutdown, or that the wave comes back, or that certain casinos open and then are forced to close and then reopen again. So we're planning. I'm spending most of my time planning for all the contingencies going forward, because we want to make sure GLI is sustainable for the long term. And we've been doing this for a lot of years, and we've seen a lot of crises, whether it's the financial crisis. We've lived through two or three of those. Mm-hmm. We've lived through 9/11, where people couldn't get on a plane. You know, I've seen these crises, and we've never seen a crisis where all the casinos in the world were shut down simultaneously on the same day. Okay, no one would ever have thought that would have happened. So I would say this is our biggest challenge yet, but we continue to look forward and try to be hopeful, but be on guard for what might happen in the future and plan for both scenarios at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time today,
James. No worries. Thanks for coming in today. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Hope you enjoyed this week's podcast, brought to you by FSB, the industry's leading sports betting solutions and technology platform. For more information, visit fsbtech.com. To learn more about GLI and how it is serving the gaming industry, visit ggbmagazine.com. To get all the news of the gaming industry, particularly of the coronavirus situation and its impact on gaming, including daily updates, subscribe for free at ggbnews.com by using the code GGB180. And don't miss a single episode of the podcast. Subscribe on iTunes or Spotify today. So we'll see you next week on the GGB Podcast.